This is LabCast, insights and ideas for the expansion stage senior manager, hosted by OpenView Labs.
Hello and welcome to LabCast. I'm Kevin Kane, and today I'm turning over the program to my colleague Firas Raouf, one of our venture partners here at OpenView. Firas and I have been working on a new ebook about how to build high-performance boards of directors, which will be coming out later this winter. As part of that exercise, Firas decided to speak with Pascal Levinson, managing partner at Levinson Venture Partners, who has deep insights into boards of directors and how they work. In this two-part series, they will be discussing the ins and outs of boards and how to run successful board meetings. Let's go ahead and listen in on their conversation.
So, Pascal, based on your experience with all the companies you've sort of worked with and the boards you sat on, I guess I want to start off with your take on what do you see as the primary value of having a board of directors? Sort of a lot of the early stage technology company CEOs tend to cringe when they think about their boards, whether to create them or to actually be engaged with them. So maybe your thoughts on where do you see the value coming from in having a board of directors?
I'd say there are three principal positive contributions that a board of directors can make to an early stage company. The first, and probably the most important, is the benefit of the pattern recognition that your directors have that you as the CEO don't have. And the reason is because the portfolio effect for professional investors is something that is simply not available to entrepreneurs. The second big value is in building your team. You should have directors who can help you recruit new team members, and they should be a magnet for you to get talent. The third is providing governance and oversight. And these are two fiduciary duties that are extremely important, and they will protect the CEO from situations where there's conflict of interest. And it's very important to be able to have objective third parties who are in a fiduciary position.
Got it. I'm very intrigued by the first one. And I totally agree with it, by the way. The pattern recognition, I think, is quite vital. So in order to deliver on that, what have you seen as the ideal profiles of board members, whether they're the investor persona or the independent board member persona?
So from the CEO's perspective, I think that you should look at the board as a mosaic, and you'd like to have different colored tiles in that mosaic. So it would be ideal to have someone who has domain expertise that is complementary to either the CEO's or is directly related to the business focus of the company. It's also really important to have somebody who understands operational finance so that they can actually help as you build the company and they've seen a lot of the challenges that you're going to maybe see for the first time. And third is somebody who's got just generally a deep Rolodex and can help you with contacts, and so that things that as the inexperienced CEO or even an experienced CEO just isn't necessarily going to have the Rolodex reach that a great director is going to have. And so this can really make a, sometimes you can have all of that in one person, but often you might need to find that across two or three different people.
And what have you found as sort of the best practices in engaging board members in value-adding activities outside of board meetings? Have you seen some patterns there of how best to do it and some poor practices?
Absolutely. I think that a best practice is having a meal either before or after the board meeting with all of the directors and the CEO, who is usually a director also, but also some key other management team members. I think that just having that free and easy communication and building a relationship is really important. I unfortunately have seen situations where the management team refuses to engage. I think it's an extremely bad sign. I think it shows lack of professionalism, and then I think it really just questions the viability of the relationship. I think that it's critically important that the CEO speak with each of the directors individually prior to every board meeting to give them a sense of what to expect, and also to ask them if there's any agenda items that they would like. And if the CEO doesn't reach everyone, somebody on the board needs to be doing that as well, right? So if you have the chairman of the board reaching out to the other directors. I also think it's critical that in discussions between the board and the CEO, that the board speak with one voice and that you don't have this divide and conquer type approach from the CEO where he tries to break people apart, cause conflict. And I think that it's the chairman's role really to be the spokesperson for the rest of the directors and to have built consensus.
So do you recommend, in especially in earlier stage companies, to separate the CEO role from the chairman role?
So I've seen it work. I think one of the key things in venture capital, and just I think as a general comment for early stage companies, is be flexible. And you can read the material and see what people have said about best practices, but you really have to assess who's around the table. You know, how do people get along? And I have seen successful companies where the chairman and the CEO are the same person. I'm chairman of two companies right now. I've served as chairman, I think, of at least five companies. And, I try to be very constructive. And it's a very good thing to split the roles, and I recommend it, but it's not essential.
Got it. Now, when you, from your experiences being on board or observing boards or consulting on boards, what are the common complaints, so to speak, that board members have of their CEOs?
Well, so an interesting set of statistics have actually identified common conflicts, and so the Dow Jones Venture One National Venture Capital Association did surveys in 2006 and I believe again in 2008. And the common conflicts, interestingly, from the venture capitalist perspective, the number one problem is a personality problem. The number two problem is disagreement over exit strategy, meaning a liquidity event. And the number three problem has to do with changes in the management team. From the CEO's perspective, it's very different. So CEOs find the most common problem to be disagreement over valuations, followed by disagreement over sales and market strategy and burn rate. And so what's interesting is that when you think about valuations and burn rate, all of those concerns really have to do with one thing, which is dilution of management's shareholding, right? So I would say that the number one thing that the management team is always worried about is, boy, what's going to happen to my share ownership? It's going to continue to shrink. And the number one thing that the professional investor is worried about is, how am I going to get liquidity for this investment so I can raise my next fund, right? So, again, very different perspectives.
Now, it sounds like the perspectives are polarized from a CEO perspective and then a professional investor perspective. Maybe you can comment a little bit on the role of the independent board member and what do you think is, what would you advise CEOs to, as ways of using independent board members to create more balance on their boards?
Yeah, I mean, independent board members are critical because there's often some type of conflict of interest for the shareholder director, right? So the professional investor who owns preferred shares, and there's often a conflict of interest for the management team. And so having someone who is not a major check writer, but who has, you know, the gravitas to be listened to is really, really important. And also you need that independent director to approve the next financing, assuming that, you know, they're not party to the next financing. So independent directors can also be very useful as mentors to CEOs, especially if they come from the same industry or they're, you know, former entrepreneurs themselves who are retired, et cetera. I would say that a problem I've seen a number of times with independent directors are people who come out of large corporations and have big company backgrounds. They tend not to understand. I've seen this multiple times over 15 years. They tend not to understand the realities of doing business as a startup and the resource constraints, and they tend to fall into thinking like big company people, and they don't really roll their sleeves up. So I've seen some independent directors be too hands-off. I'd say independent directors that have entrepreneurial backgrounds, those are really the best.
And would you expect them to sort of be CEO, full-time CEOs of their own companies, or do you sort of find it best to have independent board members who sort of are not working full-time, I suppose?
So I think it depends on how engaged the CEO, the current CEO, wants their independent director to be. So I've seen some CEOs who are full-time on something else. You know, they're just not as available as you'd like them to, so that can be frustrating. So sometimes it's really helpful to have somebody who's got more time on their hands, especially if there's a real mentorship opportunity.
And from a timing of setting up a board, you know, I've seen at the startup phase anything from companies with no boards to a board that's populated by, you know, four founders and one advisor to actually real boards with real board members. What are your thoughts on sort of what's the right stage to create your first board and whether or not you should start it with the right balance between managers and independents and depending on whether they have investors, actually have investors on the board?
Yeah, so I think that if I had to draw a bright line, I think the bright line test is you need a formal board of directors the second you start taking third-party capital. Okay? And I think you're making a huge mistake if you don't do that. I think prior to that, I feel that you need a formal governance structure from day one. Now, whether you choose to populate that, so if you're bootstrapping or you're self-financing because you got plenty of cash flow from something else, or you know, you're doing sweat equity and credit cards, all I'm saying is you better have a governance structure, and you can choose to populate that with friends, right? But realistically, you should populate that with people who you're going to listen to, right? And so I don't care if it's an advisory board or a board of directors prior to taking third-party capital. I'm just saying that you must have a formal oversight body that you're going to take non-day-to-day questions of strategy and process to. Because it is really important to do that.
Great. Well, Pascal, thank you very much for engaging us in this first part of our discussion. And look forward to our next podcast.
Thank you.
Stay tuned until next week when Firas and Pascal continue their conversation about how to run effective board meetings.